dealing with an ideology, which is what the QAnon conspiracy theory really has become, is exceedingly difficult to counter, as opposed to maybe one or two individuals bent on violent activity. The ideology allows for individuals to become radicalized, and that is more of a long-term and enduring challenge that goes simply beyond the writ of the FBI.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Backstory. I'm Dana Lewis in London. QAnon. I first broadcast an in-depth story on QAnon back in July of 2020. And I can tell you I really didn't understand that much about the group until those interviews. And since then, a couple of QAnon members were elected to Congress. It became front and center in the storming of the Capitol. QAnon members believe in some cabal of Satan worshippers existing in the Democratic Party, torturing and murdering children. It's a bizarre cult, wacky, dangerous. In March, QAnon prophesized Trump would come back to the White House and be president. With the passing of March 4th, a highly anticipated date for followers of the QAnon conspiracy theory, some remain characteristically delusional. They will adjust their conspiracy theories to some other date now, much like the guy who holds a poster on the street corner saying the end is nigh. And he always changes the date. But QAnon includes in its roster of the loony policemen and soldiers and politicians. And that's just scary. On this backstory, QAnon, and does this international cult fall apart with Trump as its spiritual leader, or does it marry into evangelical religious followers who see parallels in their beliefs in QAnon's end of days prophecies? In the summer, long before the Capitol insurrection, I interviewed Jason Blazikas from the Sufan Center, who largely predicted violence from QAnon, but probably not on that scale. And now Jason joins us again. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Hey, Dana. Great to be on the program again. I am doing well. Hope you are doing well as well.
Thank you so much. And you also teach at Middlebury Institute. You teach terrorism. Is QAnon an extension of that course, or is that morphing more into kind of the radical right in America?
So I teach a course on Introduction to Terrorism, and there is a module in that course on cults where we discuss groups like al-Sharikiyya and the Mujahideen Iqaf. But of course, in that class, we are talking also about QAnon in the context of cults and terrorism. And in the course I'm developing for the Middlebury Institute, in fact, for the fall, there'll be a module related to cults in the American radical right, of which, of course, QAnon is very well postured, unfortunately. And we'll be talking a lot about QAnon in that class, too.
I don't like to quote Fox News too much, but I know one of their evening program hosts has called QAnon followers gentle patriots waving flags. It was Tucker Carlson. I mean, do you think he's living on another planet, or is grouping QAnon in a category of terrorism too harsh?
I don't think it's too harsh. I most certainly would disagree with Tucker Carlson's assessment that, you know, all QAnon adherents are gentle patriots. I think we saw firsthand on the 6th of January that there are quite a few QAnon adherents who are anything but gentle. Ashley Babbitt stormed the Capitol. Of course, she was killed, but she was a QAnon follower, as was the QAnon shaman. In that individual had a spear in the Capitol, and he's behind bars. So there are quite a few individuals within QAnon who've carried out violence even before the 6th of January. And it is an extremist ideology. There's no two ways about it. And because it's an extremist ideology, I think it's a disservice to call these individuals just simply gentle patriots. I would, you know, characterize the events of January 6th, like Christopher Wray did, the director of the FBI. He called it an act of domestic terrorism. So there were certainly then, thus, individuals within QAnon who stormed the Capitol, who I think we should consider as domestic terrorists. So we can't let them off like that in the way Tucker Carlson described them.
Is there a link between white supremacists, some of the dangerous white supremacists, and QAnon, are there links there?
There is. If you examine the Q drops from the so-called Q, who nobody knows exactly who Q is still to this day, but the individual purports to have a military level clearance and is inside the US government working on defense intelligence issues. In Q's early messages, very early on, he took a very anti-Semitic approach to discussing the so-called deep state being funded by the Rothschilds and the Soroses of the world. So there is an inherent anti-Semitism within the QAnon movement that makes me really uncomfortable. And in that sense, there are some analogies that you can draw between some of the more hardcore white supremacists and their ideology, as well as the QAnon theories that some subscribe to. That's not to say that all QAnon, you know, adherents are certainly white supremacists. They are. They're a very diverse set of individuals. But some of those underlying theories of QAnon are anti-Semitic, and people need to understand that.
Is the QAnon that we talked about in the summer, a bizarre far-right conspiracy group that, thinks that the Democrats are holding children hostages and drinking the blood of children. And, you know, it's really almost, I shake my head every time I go through this stuff. But have they evolved from what they were in the summer to where we are now in terms of the QAnon that is rooted in America?
So QAnon has undergone a shock to the system. Many of the adherents thought on January 20th, the United States military was going to encircle President Biden and all his associates and take them out. And that didn't happen. President Biden was sworn in and he's running the government. And that led for many members to a situation where they had this cognitive dissonance where what they believed was illustrated to be patently false. So you had some individuals.
But then again on March 4th,
March 4th, exactly. There was another conspiracy theory that President Trump was going to be sworn in on the 4th of March, dating back to some bizarre convoluted scheme dating back to 1871, where the United States became a corporation instead of a country, and that on March 4th, the United States would become a country again, led by Donald Trump, who would become the vice president.
If you told me that on March 3rd, lawmakers would sit longer to pass legislation so that they weren't going to be in Congress on the 4th, and that they would essentially, some of them, leave Washington on the 4th, I'd say, come on, Jason. And that's exactly what happened.
It was, because there was also credible warnings by the U.S. law enforcement community that there were individuals who were trying to take advantage of that date of March 4th to carry out potentially attack against the United States Congress. And because of that, congressional deliberations were stalled. So people took that date seriously in law enforcement because they learned from the 6th of January that there are individuals who really are bent on destroying democracy in the United States. And some of those individuals inevitably are still part of the QAnon community. I said there are some individuals who certainly have walked away because they see that there have been just nothing but false prophecies associated with Q's messages. But there are those people, and I wrote an article recently in the Los Angeles Times, who are doubling down. And those are the most ardent supporters within cults. You know, cults historically have changed dates, whether it's the Heaven Gates cult from the 1970s to 1990s, when, essentially they changed a date and when this magical situation would occur, when the UFO was going to pick them up. And you've seen it with other cults. They move the goalposts, as it were. In QAnon, the individuals who stay within the movement are moving those goalposts to conform with their own worldviews. So that makes them really dangerous, those that remain behind.
Okay, I'm glad I let you finish that point, because that's really important. The surveys, some of the polling in America said that large groups of evangelical Christians are drawn into QAnon, and that a large number of Republican evangelical Christians belong to QAnon or follow it and identify with its philosophy, whatever that happens to be.
Absolutely. And there is this movement, and it's been happening over this past year. And there are some scholars out there who track QAnon very closely, like Mark Andre Argentino, who've spoken about this in some length. There is this natural religious terminology connected to the QAnon movement. The idea that there's going to be a great awakening, for instance, that has very overt religious connotations. And that is the language of QAnon, that people will become enlightened through the truth. And then once they are enlightened, that will allow for the precipitation of a, quote, storm, which would lead essentially to this bloodletting of the secret cabal that you described earlier, Dana, of Democrats, of Jews like Soros, who are funding the deep state, who are abusing children. That bloodletting will occur, and they will be destroyed and wiped off the face of the earth. So there is kind of an apocalyptical millenarian aspects to this quasi religious cult, and it is very disturbing to see that there is increasing interest within the evangelical community about what QAnon is. That's very worrisome. We're also seeing in some of the research we're doing at the Soufan Center that there is a lot of anti-abortion rhetoric now associated with individuals who populate the QAnon community. And that's worrisome because in terms of acts of violence perpetuated in the United States by individuals, there have been a significant number of attacks against things like the Planned Parenthood, doctors who have provided abortions. So I do worry that there could be a QAnon follower who is now avidly drinking up some of these anti-abortion related conspiracies who could do real world harm.
Is the FBI now, have they shifted philosophically and said, okay, we have, first of all, domestic terrorism is the greatest threat in America right now, more than ISIS or Al-Qaeda, or, I mean, we've at least heard that from them testifying, before one of the congressional committees, the head of the FBI. Is QAnon now somebody, a group that is being taken very, very seriously by law enforcement officials, and do they need to classify them as a potential terror group in order to source funding, in order to intercept communications? Are they equipped as a law enforcement agency currently to deal with QAnon's threat?
So back in 2019, the Arizona Phoenix FBI field office declared the QAnon conspiracy theory to be a domestic terrorism threat. And in that sense, the FBI, at least somewhat early on, probably not as early as they could have, start thinking about those who subscribe to that theory as being potentially dangerous individuals. And then you fast forward in time to January 6th, I think the writing became very clearly on the wall. We know a couple of very specific cases of QAnon supporters who were part of that insurrection. But if you look at the symbols of the day, you saw a lot of QAnon shirts, QAnon regalia. Even of individuals who did not go into the Capitol building, who still protested, which was their right to protest, right? But once you cross that breach the barrier, that's another story. Is the FBI well postured to deal with QAnon and just domestic terrorism writ large? FBI Director Christopher Wray testified, I think it was last week. I think it was the week of the 1st of March 2nd, in that time period. And he said in 2 years, there's been more than 100% growth in domestic terrorism investigations, from 850 in 2019 to 2000 in 2021. I imagine of that subset, there are most certainly QAnon related investigations that are ongoing with the FBI. But with such an explosion of cases, I do worry that the FBI may not have all the resources and FBI agents they could use to tackle this threat. And I think Christopher Wray said as much. So I don't think they're as well postured as they could be. And I think dealing with an ideology, which is what the QAnon conspiracy theory really has become, is exceedingly difficult to counter, as opposed to maybe one or two individuals bent on violent activity. The ideology allows for individuals to become radicalized, And that is more of a long-term and enduring challenge that goes simply beyond the writ of the FBI.
When you look at what former President Trump said about QAnon, you know, back in August, he said, you know, I've heard these people just love our country. Do you believe that with kind of a wink and a nod, he tapped into QAnon to bolster his support, to bolster support at the rallies, and maybe to supercharge them on the way to the Capitol?
Unfortunately, I do think either witting or unwittingly, it's hard to know, President Trump certainly used buzzwords over a long period of time that motivated individuals within the QAnon community. He was always reluctant in the lead up to the election to condemn them, to chastise them for being engaged in problematic behavior, which they were, both online and in the real world. In that sense, I think he unfortunately emboldened individuals within the QAnon community. And if you look
So which one is it, wittingly or unwittingly?
I'm not sure with the President Trump, honestly. It's hard to say what's going through that guy's mind. So it's hard for me to conjecture. I will tell you this, though. If you look at the individuals who have been arrested, whether they're QAnon or they're something else, they all have said they were following the words and orders of President Donald J. Trump. And they actually felt they were fulfilling a mission on his behalf. And there's no two ways about that. So whether he's witting or unwitting, to me, a president has to be very careful about the language that they use, and he was not.
This guy in the summer told me, and I think he's very smart, and he knows this topic, some guy named Jason Blazekas told me that he thinks that maybe there is state-sponsored, as in another state, maybe Russia, maybe somebody that could be toying with QAnon followers and stirring the misled. Now, all these months later, what do you think? Do you think that there's intelligence agencies and state sponsors playing with this group?
Absolutely. And we have a report at the Soufan Center that's going to be issued very soon where we explore the issue of foreign influence with the QAnon community. And it's more than one country that is essentially stirring the pot online to amplify QAnon messages. And that includes Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, and Iran, interestingly enough, with the Russian Federation and the Chinese actually stirring the pot the most. So there's certainly an aspect in which foreign governments see QAnon as a community that can lead to societal discord within the United States. And all those countries I mentioned, they're inherently anti-democratic, right? And anything that they can do to make a country like the United States, which tries to push for throughout the world democracy, making the United States' lives more difficult, is in their national geostrategic interests in a lot of ways. So
yeah, I mean, this whole information war and disinformation war, that's so interesting what you're saying. Do you think that the big internet, big tech companies are successful in pulling down the QAnon accounts and countering disinformation, or it's just a drop in the bucket?
It's a drop in the bucket. Unfortunately, they were slow to respond generally to toxic anti-hate language online over these last few years. It was only more recently where we saw Silicon Valley take a much more serious approach to trying to counter content online. So they're doing better on English language content, but we're still seeing, and this is one of the recommendations in our report, a heavy amount of foreign language QAnon associated content circulating online. And in particular, they have made strides in countering, I think, Russian language propaganda, but they're not doing quite as well in terms of Chinese related language propaganda related to the QAnon message.
It's international now, right? I mean, there's huge followings in Europe in QAnon.
It is. It's gone global, unfortunately. It's spread like wildfire throughout Europe, Australia, Russia, Japan. I was talking to a former student of mine, actually. She lives in Japan, and she was showing me some of the Japanese QAnon-related posts. And QAnon is very popular in Japan. And that's very worrisome because Japan does have a history of cults, like the Aum Shinrikyo cult that carried out the 1995 Tokyo subway attack with sarin chemical agents.
Sarin chemical, yeah.
Yeah, very worrisome to see that spread in places like Japan, for instance. So I'm very concerned about the scope of this threat. And I don't think it's localized to the United States any longer.
And what is the next chapter in this, Jason, before I let you go? And I appreciate your time. Do you think that, you know, Biden's approach to white supremacy, to the radical right, which includes QAnon in America, has generally, just to take the rhetoric down, you know, stay off social media, just deal with, try to become a more normal administration than the Trump administration was, and just try to turn off the hot switch. Is that's not going to deal with this completely, though?
It won't. But the fact that we have a president in the United States that uses language very carefully, I find to be incredibly helpful. And I also find it extremely helpful.
As presidents
helpful.
Are supposed to, yeah.
He's acting like an adult, which is really helpful, right? And the other thing that I think that this administration is doing much more seriously than the last is actually trying to tackle the COVID-19 pandemic, pushing out vaccines, pushing out guidance about the importance of masks in ways that I find to be helpful, because QAnon exploded as a theory turning into a belief system in 2020 because of COVID-19. People were trapped at home and they became more steeped in the toxic theories of QAnon. So the fact that President Biden is trying to actually solve COVID-19 so people can get outside of their homes and they can socialize like normal people again, I think will be hopefully the most important thing that we can do to deliver some kind of death knell to the QAnon movement.
And then you have, you know, members of Congress like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who she seems to be distancing herself from it. Somewhat. I mean, all these crazy videos have come out of her, you know, stalking students and denying that school shootings were real and saying they were red flag events. And, you know, does that go away?
Unfortunately, I don't think politicians like Marjorie Taylor Greene will completely distance themselves from the QAnon theories, because they see that there's a significant number of people that actually believe in it, and it taps into their political base. So if they were to walk away from that, it's walking away from votes. And the one thing I know about politicians is they love nothing more than votes, power, and money. So I just don't see her completely distancing herself. And I think it's really unfortunate that we have somebody like that as a member of Congress who does these things, you know, denying facts. And that is one of the hallmarks of QAnon as a theory, is this denial of objective fact. And that's problematic for a member of Congress who's representing nearly 800,000 people. It's really a stain in Congress. And thankfully, she was removed from her committee assignment. So her ability to exert true influence and power in terms of lawmaking is significantly hampered. And I think that was the appropriate action by Congress. Just when Congress took action against Representative Stephen King from Iowa, who was essentially touting white supremacist ideology, he had those committees that he was on ripped out from his hands. And the same thing has happened to Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I think that shows that we're considering conspiracy theories and truth denial associated with the QAnon movement along the same lines of toxic white supremacy related material and content.
And, but unfortunately, it's a cult that has a following, and the dangers loom, and they're not going to go away that quickly. And that's why I think you got a course on the radical right to keep teaching. Jason Blazekas from the Soufan Center. Thank you so much, Jason. Good to catch up with you again.
Great to be on the program, Dana. Pleasure to be with you, and take care.
All right, my friend. Samantha North is the director of North Cyber Research, and she specializes in countering disinformation and joins us from Lisbon, Portugal. Hi, Samantha.
Hi there. It's good to be here. Thank you very much for having me on.
What does North Cyber Research do exactly? Because, you know, countering disinformation sounds like a pretty big portfolio.
Yes, it can be. Primarily election security. So helping some of the social media platforms, for example, to kind of police their, you know, their territory for signs of disinformation and coordinated inauthentic behavior. That's probably my primary focus. And then I can do similar things for assorted other clients as well.
So when you talk about QAnon and disinformation, what concerns you most about what you've seen?
Well, where to start? It's a huge topic. And this year, really, we've seen it kind of come off the rails and explode into real life with the Capitol attack in Washington, D.C. I think what really concerns me is kind of looking at it from a long-term perspective. There's this tribalism now running deep in the U.S. and in the U.K. to a certain extent, because QAnon has become a borderless conspiracy theory. But with this kind of tribal attitude and this polarization, it can make it very challenging for societies to cooperate on matters that affect everyone. And a good case in point would be the pandemic. So one thing with that...
I mean, when it comes to vaccines, for instance,
precisely.
Part of the disinformation campaign, I don't know if that ties into QAnon, does it? About, you know, the anti-vaxxers as well?
Anti-vaxxer themes overlap with QAnon, absolutely. It's a very wide-ranging conspiracy theory, and it puts its tentacles into many different areas. So, yeah.
What's the QAnon theory on vaccines?
Oh, well, Bill Gates is a key figure in that. He is the evil conspirer who is using the pandemic and the vaccines as a reason to have us all microchipped via the vaccine so that we can then be tracked anywhere we go. That's probably the one that springs to mind.
So when they talk about kind of the things that I'm familiar with, where, you know, they've widely publicized this notion that Democrats, you know, drink the blood of murdered children, and then it progressed into an election theft, and that maybe Trump is Q. Are those kind of the building blocks of, you know, what a lot of people think is a cult?
A cult, well, yeah, it has some features of cults, and a lot of people seem to be very brainwashed. For example, I did some research on YouTube earlier on in 2020, and ordinary people are creating two-hour-long YouTube videos dissecting every aspect of Q's latest message, and with a real sort of frenzy in their demeanor, in their eyes, you know, they really believe this stuff. So I guess in that sense, its way of brainwashing people is akin to a cult, yeah.
I mean, there have been some pretty tragic stories from family members about somebody who, you know, starts down this rabbit hole of QAnon, a relative, a mother, and they cannot get them out of it. I mean, it really becomes a trap and a trap into some sort of dimension that, you know, people just get further and further away from reality.
Absolutely. I think it has a lot of similarities with ISIS radicalization. It's a form of radicalization with just a different narrative, with different cultural touch points, but the effect is the same. You know, these people have a framework that they can hang all aspects of their reality on. And in these uncertain times, amid a pandemic in particular, people really need some certainty. And I think that is very compelling and very addictive.
Do you think with a wink and a nod that President Trump was helping to drive it?
Yes, I think so. I'm sure of that, whether advertently or inadvertently, but his behavior on social media with his following, you know, the millions of people that follow him, and being the president of the US, then how could he have not known what effect it would have? It's not feasible.
And with Trump removed from power now, at least temporarily, let's see what happens in 4 years, is the temperature coming down at all? Are people leaving QAnon?
Yeah, I feel like we're in a sort of a hiatus now. Obviously, it was a big blow to their narrative when Biden won the election. I believe they received another blow recently. I think it was early March, which was supposed to be another key date in the Q calendar. Something, I think March the 4th, perhaps. Something was supposed to happen.
When they said that Trump would be, somehow he would be, he would come back to power. He would be inaugurated somehow.
Well, whatever that was, we all know it didn't happen. So I think that, some people are going to drift away from it. And I've already seen signs of this. People saying we were lied to, we were deceived. So they'll lose probably the outlying, the weaker believers, but they'll always be at the heart of the true believers there. And that's very worrying for the Biden administration, right? Because, you know, so many of these people, and I don't think they're just going to disappear overnight just because Joe Biden is president.
Do you think that there are links, and how tenuous do you think they are to groups like Proud Boys and white supremacy?
Yeah, there are links. As to what exactly they look like in practice, I don't know, but there are certainly ideological links that they share. They're on the same end of the political spectrum, and they share some of the same tactics. You know, they're going to go to the street, and they're likely to get involved in violent protests. Like in the Capitol, I would expect there to be not only QAnon people, but probably people who sympathize with the Proud Boys and white supremacist groups in general.
I was reading a quote from you where you said that because QAnon has sparked so many different sub-conspiracy theories, that there's a lot of scope just to keep twisting into a new narrative. So Trump is gone, but they'll find something else to keep it going.
Yeah, definitely. We don't know yet what that would look like. It's probably going to go underground, the Q conspiracy theory, because I believe a lot of the major social media platforms are now banning it quite comprehensively. And Trump's also been booted off, most of them. So I can envisage them going underground onto more alternative platforms like Parler or like Gab or like MeWe, and then sort of proliferating there and in a toxic kind of swamp, and perhaps manifesting in violent real life events from time to time, you know, like when some lone wolf decides to take matters into their own hands. That's a risk, I believe.
An internal presentation from 2016, reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, a company researcher, Monica Lee, found that Facebook was not only hosting a large number of extremist groups, but also promoting them to the users, and that 64%, this she was quoted as saying, 64% of all extremist groups joined are due to recommendation tools, these AI algorithms that feed people kind of more and more what the algorithms think will keep them hooked on the platform like Facebook. Do you think that's still going on, or are the big techs slowly throttling back from that? I mean, a lot of people say Facebook has not dealt with it.
Yeah, that is difficult to evaluate, but I would say that until the fundamental architecture of the social media platforms changes, you know, that they rely on engagement for their value to advertisers, right? And engagement, it's hard to tell if it's negative or positive, if it's conspiracy theory or cat videos. So I believe until that model can be changed, it's going to be very difficult to really keep this stuff under control, because the algorithm's always going to lead the user to what the user likes. They're going to serve them up more of what they like and what they engage with. And by their very nature, these shocking conspiracy theories are more compelling and more engaging.
I was just going to say, I mean, those are what the studies tell us, right? Maximum engagement means controversy, misinformation, extremism. And when you start telling a social media company don't have maximum engagement, that doesn't ring, you know, very well with their dollar and cents bottom line, because maximum engagement is where they make their advertising dollars.
Exactly. And there was an article out just a few days ago, I think, Technology Review or some such, maybe you saw it. It was a deep dive into what's going on behind the scenes at Facebook and the kind of discussions that, you know, they have when they try to tackle these problems. And that really, it supported what you said and what I think is the case. You know, they don't want to cut engagement because they need it.
So how do you fight disinformation? I mean, I've led you through a lot of the disinformation that you're well aware of. Yeah. Is there a way that we begin to dismantle this? Because if we don't, we are seeing everything from the subversion of democracy to the sparking of insurgencies and storming of democratic capitals, to civil war, to violent extreme movements and extremists, both in the United States and around the world. I mean, this is an international issue now.
Yeah, it's sobering, really, the extent to which, and the way you describe it, you put it perfectly. I like to think that there's a way to go back to the public and to the users, and perhaps not just media literacy, although that's also important, but kind of educating people about the psychological side of how they engage with these things on social media. You know, like, disinformation and inauthentic behavior are deliberately designed to trigger certain biases in the minds of humans. And most people don't really know this. So, for example, I can give you an example here. I don't know if you've ever been drawn into a trolling argument on social media. I know I have. When a person just wants to keep arguing with you, right? And it seems like they just don't want to stop.
I have regrettably gotten into a few counterpunches and thought, why on earth did I ever engage in the first place?
Precisely, and me too, many times. I mean, I've had to consciously hold myself back. But I think, you know, in that situation, we get so kind of focused on beating the opponent, on telling them our point of view, that we're more susceptible to disinformation in those moments. You know, perhaps we'll share an article with them to prove our point, to drive our point home. Perhaps that article, we won't take the time to critically assess it because we're so keen on getting one up on the enemy. And that's a kind of tribalism as well, I think, this us versus them. In my research on Brexit, from part of my doctoral research, I looked into how Brexit supporters and Remain supporters go at one another on social media and how tribal they are. And, you know, that opens people up to this kind of toxic content. So the psychological biases are critical. And I would like to see more focus on understanding those and on finding ways to somehow integrate that into policy and, you know, educating the users themselves.
Are there parallels with Britain leaving the European Union, the campaign that the leavers, the pro-Brexit camp, you know, pushed out on the sides of buses and elsewhere? Are there parallels with what's happened with QAnon in terms of disinformation and how they hooked into people?
Yes, there are. Well, QAnon is a lot more outrageous. I think that both of those campaigns had their own flavor kind of tailored to the populations and the cultural context within which they were operating, right? So perhaps QAnon would have been less successful in a British context because some of the things it's involved with are uniquely American, I think. But what they have in common is tribalism. They're setting two sides at each other's throats. So we've got Brexiteers and Remainers in the UK, you know, and Remainers are portrayed as the enemy and as less patriotic and as, you know, subversive to the European Union. With QAnon, there's the Q followers, who are the enlightened ones, and then the sheeple, everybody else who is not enlightened with Q. And Q is going to fight this big enemy, these paedophile cabals from Hollywood elites. So I think there's all a lot of group identity theory at work there. And it's very interesting how that seems to really be a feature of every disinformation campaign I've ever seen. There's always an us versus them component.
And fear that, you know, your borders are being swarmed by immigrants, or you're losing control of your justice system, your independence. They're giving away the country.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fear is a powerful trigger. And, you know, for centuries, really, dictators and populist leaders have leveraged fear, and it's nothing new to use that tactic.
But it always works. I feel a bit dark at the end of this conversation, in the sense that, you know, to tell people they need to read information better, they need to be more skeptical, they need to understand that algorithms are feeding them kind of, you know, more extremist information to keep them hooked. I don't think that's going to turn it around for a lot of people. So we need something a little more, you know, hands-on, push the red interrupt button to stop this, because otherwise I don't see it ending. And probably, you know, let's say Trump decides to run again in 2024. I just see this, you know, getting swirled around again and supercharged.
Yeah, that's a... It's a big worry. Perhaps regulation is the answer. I know that the European Union is taking some small step in the direction of regulation of the platforms, but I don't know how that might work in the US with the First Amendment. I think it's a more difficult environment there.
In Europe, how would they regulate it? I mean, simply by demanding removal of content?
I think that could be one of the components. I haven't looked into it in great detail, but I know that the freedom of speech laws are, you know, not as loose as they are in the US, not as permissive. So I guess they could do that. They can take down a lot more things, I think, like the bar for what constitutes a violation of content is different in Europe. It's lower. So that's one thing. But yeah, we need to take quite dramatic action. And I wish I had a really good solution to this, because, you know, then maybe I could be president. Who knows?
All right, Samantha North, thank you so much for your time. I mean, it's good. Look, it's perplexing to a lot of people how we go about this. And the removal of some of the content from some of the big platforms, no doubt, has helped. And you're right. I think generally Europe, in given our history with Nazi Germany and, you have First Amendment freedom of speech rights. But when it comes to the spreading of hatred, the red lines are drawn, it seems, much more quickly. And so, you know, I guess you're right. I mean, the U.S. is going to have to adapt to its system as it evaluates that this threat is no longer comical. But I mean, it's a real threat to their democracy.
I have some hope that the Biden administration will take a more productive approach than the previous one did. So fingers crossed. Let's hope for a good outcome.
Good to talk to you.
You too. Thank you.
Something to think about. The Combating Terrorism Center at West Point concluded that there is significant overlap between QAnon and extremist channels affiliated with groups like the Proud Boys, paramilitary groups, and white supremacists. These same groups attract former military members too. A 2019 Military Times survey found that 36% of active duty troops had seen evidence of white supremacist and racist ideologies in their ranks. There have been QAnon postings in U.S. military sites, including a brigade in the 82nd Airborne. It is high time for the military to educate its members on the dangers of this cult, and police need to do the same. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Disinformation deserves re-education. I'm Dana Lewis. Thanks for listening to Backstory. I also do a daily newsletter, which can be found on Substack. It's free. DanaLewis.substack.com. Have a look. Thanks for the listen. I'm Dana Lewis, and I'll talk to you again soon.